Welcome everyone this afternoon. We have actually two groups of people with us here. We have a group of people who are part of a Worship Renewal Grants Colloquium, people from all over North America, as well as a group of people as part of a Day of Learning, and mostly from West Michigan area. If you could just maybe identify yourself, who's here for the Day of Learning? So we've got about half of you, and then the other half, identify yourself, raise your hand, part of the Worship Renewal Grants Colloquium. Good. And I hope the two different groups of people get a chance to talk with one another throughout this time as well, to learn from each other and to hear about just the different perspectives and the different places from which you come and where you are leading and planning worship and doing a collaboration and evaluation and learning things together. So this is a workshop that we'll be talking about collaborative planning and evaluation. And my name is Paul Ryan, and I serve with the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship in a part-time capacity as a resource specialist in the area of worship teams, worship team development, and planning and leading. And then actually a bulk of my time is spent here at the campus of Calvin College. I oversee our daily chapel program, a Sunday evening worship service called Loft, Living Our Faith Together, as well as a worship apprentice program where I have a team of students that I mentor and coach and train in the area of worship leadership, and then they become point leaders for lots of volunteer students and staff and faculty throughout our campus. I did not come to Calvin College by way of the Christian Reformed Church or by way of West Michigan. I'm originally from Northeastern Ohio, where I grew up in a non-denominational charismatic church. And from the time I was very little, I remember standing up on top of the pew and looking over the people in front of me and saying, "Mommy, Mommy, I can't see the screen." And that was back in the days of overhead projectors, you know, where they had the bin of overheads that are right there. And this is a charismatic church, mind you. So, you know, they're just, whenever they go on to the next song, they're just whipping through this and whoo, pulling out the file and then putting it down. And they had an art to this. They had two different ones going at the same time, too. So I grew up in that kind of context. But then when I was in high school, I rebelled. And I wanted to go to the Lutheran church down the street and sing with the organ and the choir there, but my parents wouldn't let me. They wanted me to go to church with them, and so I went off to Indiana University where I studied vocal performance, and I got my heart's desire, and I became a section leader in an Episcopalian choir. I became section leader, so I did that for a couple of years, but boy, that was a big change coming from a charismatic church to then processing with the cross and the choir and the robes and the incense and all those kinds of things. And later I got introduced to Reformed theology, and started attending a non-denominational church that came out of a Presbyterian background, had a Reformed flavor to it. And a number of people in Bloomington, Indiana, where I was, had sent their kids to Calvin College or Calvin graduates. And so when I started looking at seminaries, they said, "Well, you should check out Calvin College, Calvin Seminary." Came up here, got introduced to Dutch Reformed theology and Dutch Calvinism, and about 3 years later, I accepted John Calvin into my heart. Got ordained in the Christian Reformed Church, and so I'm a minister in the Christian Reformed Church, but I serve primarily here at the college. And I've served one Christian Reformed Church as a music director there, but most of my ministry has taken place here at the college, working with campus ministry and college students. Over the years, as I've been planning, I've experienced a number of different ways in which I've had to go about planning worship, or ways in which I've had to work with different kinds of people in different scenarios in which to plan different kinds of people, different kinds of ministries and interests. And I've largely found that there are kind of two main popular planning styles in existence. And I'll characterize them in this way. One was, when I was in seminary, I remember oftentimes I would do what was called pulpit supply. And so I'd be called by a congregation, and they'd say, "Would you please come and do a sermon for us while our pastor is away on vacation?" "Sure, I'll do that." And largely the planning process looked like this. that on the Monday before I was to preach, I would get an email or a phone call from the bulletin secretary. And usually it was a she, and she would ask me what was my call to worship, what was my opening hymn of praise, what would be my words of assurance and pardon, what would be my hymn of response and my closing hymn. And so I would think about that for about an hour, maybe as I was putting together my sermon, and then I would type it up, an email, send it off. And then I would get there Sunday morning, lo and behold, it would be all right there in the bulletin, and an organist or a pianist would just quickly confer with me, and I would run the service. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that way I would characterize very much as a centralized planning process. You just have very few people involved in this process. Now, another process that I experienced took place that looked a little bit like this. When I was leading worship in a local congregation here in Grand Rapids, we would weekly get together. There are four of us, and we would get together once a week, and we would have our planning meeting. And right beside me in this meeting was a woman by the name of Heather. And strategically placed next to Heather was a box of tissues. Because inevitably, at one moment in this meeting, Heather would start to cry. And it was either because she was just so passionate about what she felt our congregation needed, or she was just so broken up that what she had desired for that service the day before just didn't quite go the way that she wanted it to go. And so we would just, it became a joke after a while. We would just start crying, kind of move the Kleenex pointers. Thank you. Well, then next to Heather was Barb. And Barb was a kind of a shoot at the hip kind of a person. And she would just go, "Well, I don't know why you'd like that rinky-dink kind of song." Or, "Boy, that really bombed yesterday in church." She was usually the one that made Heather cry. And then we had John, who's our pastor and generally a very open and creative guy. But every once in a while, we'd be in a real generative process, and we'd be coming up with lots of ideas. And all of a sudden, he'd go, "Okay, this is what we're going to do." Yeah. You kind of lay down the Pastor Trump card. Yeah. Like, wait a minute, we were being creative, and we had some ideas, and kind of shut off the conversation. And generally, I would sit there in the meetings, and I would just do this. And I would increasingly get more and more and more of a headache throughout the meeting. And I would go home at the end of the day, and my wife would say, "Did everything go okay?" And I would just have these terrible headaches because I had not at that point in my life really learned how to speak and how to manage these conversations, so I just bottled it all up. Well, this you might describe as a collaborative process. One way to describe a generic collaborative process. So what would you say, what are some of the advantages of a centralized process?
Thematically strong.
You might have a very thematically strong because, well, if you're the preacher and you're planning it, you're going to keep everything pretty tightly connected to a theme service.
Efficient with regard to time.
Yes, very efficient. So it would take me an hour, maybe two or something. Other people involved, very little amount of time that they needed to take.
Control.
Right? You could know that what you want at the beginning is what basically you're going to get at the end. You can control the outcome pretty well. Yeah?
I was just going to say, it's a fill-in-the-slots kind of a process.
Right, so maybe there's kind of an ease to the process. You have a template, and you can work out maybe some ease, and you know what to expect from week to week.
Better.
Maybe there are some times when you find a better or good outcome. Yeah, certainly a centralized process can have very life-giving, meaningful, blessed worship services week after week. That's very true. Yeah. Less conflict. Yeah.
Better.
Right. Unless there's conflict within you, better. Unless there's conflict within yourself. Less what? Less preference?
That's preference. That's preference talk.
Right. But what might be some of the We'll say, what are some of the disadvantages to a centralized process? Yeah.
It may not consider the needs of many.
Right. Let's see here. Consider needs of many. Right, because you consult with you yourself, and you think, well, self, how should we do this? Well, it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and I. So, but largely your circle of influence is pretty small. Yeah.
Easy to get in a rut.
Yes, yes, especially if you are the primary person planning week after week after week. Into a rut. Yeah.
Little ownership.
Little ownership, yeah. Spread out to others. Right, you might find that the person who is involved, the main person or couple of people, are very invested. Mm-hmm. Very, very invested, but there's little ownership outside.
Discounts other ministry gifts.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Discount other ministry gifts. Right, what way? What do you think? What gifts might be missing?
I mean, well, knowing the spiritual giftings of the of others around
yeah.
you, and just having a certain few or you one person, can exclude the gifts that God has in
right,
person.
Right, because not all one person doesn't have all the gifts. That's why Paul talks in 1 Corinthians about the body. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would be maybe just kind of conversely think about this? So collaborative process. What are some of the advantages of the collaborative process? Certainly, we can talk about you were considering the gifts of many, the perspective of many, maybe an easier a time at not getting into a rut, greater ownership. What are the things come to your mind about the advantages of the collaborative process?
Potentially more creative, but not automatic.
Not automatic. That's good. Yeah, I like that word. Potentially more creative.
Save on Kleenex.
What is that?
Save on Kleenex.
Save on Kleenex? For a collaborative process? Okay. Other advantages to a collaborative process?
Sometimes a collaborative process can be enriching because the group that's doing the collaborating is kind of a microcosm of the congregation.
Right, right, right. So maybe it's maybe kind of representation. Or a broader perspective of the whole community. Representation. Great. Yes?
I was going to say that the cohesiveness of the entire service in terms of, I think it's more thematic or the music fits, you can kind of talk about how things interact with each other, the musicians and the spoken word and the
right.
What the transitions are and kind of those kinds of.
So you let's say you have so if you have multiple people around the table who are responsible for different aspects of a worship service, then you have that opportunity to really collaborate mm-hmm. and have that cohesiveness. But one person could maybe manage all that. That gets pretty difficult after a while. Maybe one of the differences is that a centralized process can be very thematic, probably on a more of a limited scale. Maybe musically it's very thematic, but then once you introduce more of a collaborative process with more people involved, then you can even broaden the scope to which the children's ministry might be involved in, or the drama team, or even the pastoral care is speaking into the needs of the community and so forth. That's really good.
Well, and you're drawing on far broader expertise, so you have the right people at the table.
Yeah.
It could be more balanced too. We're talking about a presentation. More if one person is doing the whole planning,
yes.
It's gonna be that perspective, but if you have a representation then your service would be more balanced.
Right. And that could be, balanced in terms of music, could be in terms of the art, maybe in terms of the people who are involved in speaking. Oftentimes, say in a centralized process, at least in my experience, I was the person who was leading from the beginning to the end. Where in a collaborative process, oftentimes I find that there are more people involved, even in the leadership of the service itself.
There's an opportunity for learning about worship.
Yes, that's great. A new person comes on to your planning team, and so then you have an opportunity to tell them about what is the purpose of worship in your community and to learn. That's great.
And we found that it's not just learning, but you're just fed fed, even spiritually fed by the very process of planning.
Hmm, that's great.
We would argue planning is worship.
Yes.
That's great.
Planning as prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think worship can be used as evangelism when you're collaborating. Because people that are coming in from the community, when you're seeing different members of the team, let's say, for instance, drama, or dance, or even painting or whatever
mm-hmm.
that's going on in the worship service, they're seeing these types of things taking place
mm-hmm.
Versus just one.
It seems like everybody's involved and engaged, and there's some life, there's vitality, there's things happening. It's like the Spirit's at work, and more people are involved. Some of the some disadvantages to the collaborative process.
And more drama.
More drama.
That's gonna be the drama when you're by yourself, but it's more drama.
More drama. It takes longer.
Takes a while.
Yes. Yeah. Longer. Maybe it is inefficient in some ways. Not necessarily, but it can
well, it
be.
Longer. I'm not going to argue inefficient.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Getting people on board.
Just getting people on board. Is it? Oh, that if you want to have a collaborative process, you have to do the recruiting and casting a vision for people and encouraging them. Yeah.
Doesn't happen if there's a lack of commitment.
Yes.
I think you have to make sure you have the right people there too.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, decide what are the gifts that make collaboration work, mm-hmm. And then make sure those sorts of giftings, people that have those giftings, are encouraged to participate.
Yeah. Great. Well, obviously you see that there are advantages and disadvantages to both the centralized and the collaborative process.
Let me give you a handout here.
Not for everybody, there's some extras, just leave them down at the end of your row. And what I want to present to you is a... is a process, or at least components of a process, that maximize the advantages of both of these popular branding processes, and at the same time try to minimize the disadvantages as much as possible. You need a couple more?
Two more? Yep.
So here is this is a process that a former colleague and I, Ron Reinster, actually my predecessor to an earlier position that I had here at Calvin College, and Ron is now actually a professor of preaching and worship at Western Theological Seminary. That he and I had developed, and he developed a lot of the language for this, but we actually found that I was actually doing the same kind of thing, and so then we ended up together collaborating. On a workshop some years ago, and
was there drama involved in it?
There was no drama involved in that. It was pretty good, actually. and also, you can find a kind of a narrative of this process too in the book Worship Words. You've seen that book; it's an appendix. Kind of puts some narrative behind this a little bit. Worship Words by Deborah Reinstra and Ron Reinstra. But I'll quickly walk through this here. So there are basically five different stages or aspects to this collaborative process. And it involves one, previse, devise, revise, realize, and analyze. Now one of them is not a real word. The first one, yes. Right, so... Ron is someone who really likes rhyme, and so he said, well, I got these four, I got to come up with something for the first one. Previse. So hey, here are these sort of five stages or aspects. So pre-vise, you solicit as much input from as broad a group as possible. Brainstorm with an umbrella of grace about themes, songs, drama, art, dance, everything else. So this is a time when you are not thinking about a specific service. You're not thinking about Sunday, September 14. You're not thinking about a specific week. This isn't like, okay, next week's service, we need to be doing some brainstorming and thinking about this. This is a kind of time when you are looking at the big picture of worship in your community. So it might be for a season of the year. Maybe you're doing Lent planning, or maybe you're looking at what is our summer series going to be, and you're just kind of doing some big brushstroke kinds of things. But it's also just a time to just gather and collect ideas about worship in general. Maybe it's not connected to any particular series whatsoever. And so I like to think of this pre-vise time as maybe this is your operative mode is you are you're an explorer. This is a time when you just want to hear from people in your community. Maybe you have an opportunity where, as a part of a congregational meeting, you say you ask the elders, you know, could we take just 15 minutes as a part of this meeting and maybe break up into smaller groups? And we'd just love for people to take 10 minutes and jot down some ideas of what they would love to see happen in worship. You're not thinking about anything specific. You're not asking. You're not limiting it to think only about songs, or think only about drama, or only about this particular passage of scripture. But just broad brushstroke ideas, just brainstorming. You can also think of it as I like using the term green light thinking. There are no bad ideas. None whatsoever. If someone says we should use hula hoops in worship, you say, that really sounds interesting. No bad ideas at this point. You're just brainstorming. The quickest way to kill brainstorming is to say, oh, we could never do that. You shut it down. So it's all green light. It's all go, 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 go. And you're just collecting ideas. You're going to have a big dry erase board or something like that. And you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then so what happens is that you get these what's called stepping stones. So you just kind of say, someone says we should use hula hoops, and then someone starts to think about playgrounds, and then someone starts to think about children, and then someone says, how can we involve children more directly in our services of worship? Just because someone mentioned hula hoops. All right, so it's all about where it leads you, where the brainstorming leads you. So green light thinking at this point. Second, now you have what's called a devise stage. And this is the actual planning of a first draft. You begin to filter for the best ideas, make use of people with specialized expertise. What is it that John Wickley said this morning? Sanctified discipline. expertise in a particular area, music, art, drama, etc. So this might actually look like the Monday afternoon planning meeting or the Tuesday morning planning meeting. This is a regular group of people. Maybe it's once a week, maybe it's once every other week, once a month. Maybe it's at the beginning of a season, a group gets together and they kind of draft out some ideas for the season of Lent or for the season of Advent or for the ordinary time or something. You just draft out some times. At this point, you are more in an artist mode. So you're less exploring, and you have the canvas in front of you now. You actually have you've made some decisions about, well, our canvas is going to be this big. Which means, like, we're going to be doing a series in the Gospel of John. Right? So you've actually got some specific ideas about some parameters at this point. Maybe you're making some decisions on, we're going to use lots of pastels versus, you know, we're going to use watercolor or something like that. So you're making some specific ideas, you're putting some limits around the planning, but still the operative planning at this point is still pretty green light thinking. But you're just narrowing it down to a particular summit or a particular time of say, 3 or 4 weeks. And then you're gathering around the same time people who would be invested in actually putting the service together in the end. People who will be responsible for the choir or to play music or to the drama or whoever is preaching. You're actually going to have to do a sermon in that service, so forth. So particular people. Now the next stage is revise. Make use of both individual and group input to improve the service plan. So at this point, the people who are devising, being the artists, green light thinking, they're going to send off, say, a couple of people, maybe it's one person in particular, who's going to sort of put together a draft. It's a draft of the service. And then after that draft of the service, then they're going to bring that draft back to that devise group. And then that devise group is going to turn more into a revise group, and they're going to have more of a judge hat on. They're going to be looking at it, and they're going to be asking more deeper questions. You know, does this fit our context? Does this reflect our song repertoire? Is this faithful to the scripture passage? They're asking a little bit more kind of, they're being a little bit more yellow light, you know, maybe a bit of red light at this point. They're actually saying, you know what? Hula hoops aren't going to work in this service. Not so reverent. Or, you know, they're gonna start filtering out these ideas, and they're going to, you know, actually make some concrete decisions about what's going to be happening in the service. Now, largely in this time, you're hoping that there's a pretty good, solid draft at this point, something that you're really working with. You're not brainstorming anymore. You have the individuals who are planning were already working with all of those ideas that have been brainstormed, and then they're putting together some specific plans at this point. And then after you've revised the service, then you realize the service. You have to make it happen. You have to execute the service in some way. And so this is the, I'll call it the warrior hat. By the way, these categories come from a book called A Whack on the Side of the Head by Roger Van Hook. One of my absolute favorite books on creativity and brainstorming. A wonderful, wonderful book. I'll pass it around if any of you want to take a look at it. But a whack on the side of the head. So this is, you are acting as warrior at this point, and you are making sure that you are communicating the vision for the service to all participants. This is when you are sending out emails, and you're making phone calls, and you're making sure everybody knows what time they're supposed to be there and what all the details need to take place, all the mechanics that go into a service. And at some time in this realized stage, you realize that you're going to have to revise the service because you're going to execute it, and all of a sudden you find out that such and such person that you thought was going to memorize scripture and present it can't do it. So you're like, oh, let's backpedal, and we have to change some things. If you are a musician and you do rehearsals with the choir, and you realize, oh, the choir is not going to be able to perform this piece on Sunday. It's just not quite there. Or that song didn't go so well with the praise team, so you have to go back and revise a couple of things. And then lastly, then you have a time after the service when you can analyze. And this is periodically reviewing previous services, analyzing less for technical miscues or taste preferences than for theological content. So at this point, you're putting back on this is a judge hat, that kind of yellow, red light thinking. You're looking back and you're asking deeper questions that are related to what your purpose is, what your goals are for worship in your community. So you're gonna look at it with sort of broader questions like, how well have we done in including children in our planning and our meeting? And you look at maybe the services over the course of a month and you say, you know what, we've done pretty well. We could do a little bit better here. Or you might look at it and you spend less time saying, boy, the guitar was out of tune. Or the projection wasn't working. Everybody knows Right? So you don't need to talk about those kinds of things at that point. This is broader. So you're asking the question, are we finding that we have full conscious active participation of our whole community in worship? Here's some benchmarks that we're looking at for that. And how are we doing on that? How is our language for God in our services? Boy, it seems like we have a lot of references to God as Father in our prayers. But what are other images that we can be using? God is our rock. God is our creator. God is our provider. God, you know, that using other languages in our prayers, taking basic principles that you have for worship and then looking at your worship overall that way as a part of the group. Now, if you look at this looks like a whole lot of meetings. Yes, Audrey.
Okay, can you reflect that? I mean, so what in these different stages, mm-hmm. or even as impetus, is the role of the pastor?
Yes. Yeah. So if you look on the flow chart there, lovely flow chart, the pastor would be that diamond in the middle. So if you, right here, this little diamond that's right there. So it would be that, say, I imagine that a pastor should, well, I'm going to use wisdom language here. Wise is the congregation whose pastor is actively involved in the planning of worship.
But not initially. You don't have an initial.
Well, so this would be, I would imagine that the two squares are, so this would be the, so the pre-bis is like any and all people. The larger rectangle would involve the smaller rectangle and the diamond. But those people would be involved in that. So let me break it down this way. This is one way it could go. You have four people in the room. Let's say we'll go back to my Heather, Barb, John, and me. Heather, Barb, John, and I, we meet once a week at Tuesdays. Out of that meeting, we say, Heather, we would like for you to plan the service in 2 weeks. After we've brainstormed, we've got some concrete ideas for this meeting. Heather, we want you to go away and brainstorm this meeting. Heather would go away and she would brainstorm and she would plan a service. And then as she's planning the service, she would be continually coming back to me as the music director or going back to John as our pastor and saying, here are some drafts, what are you thinking? Does this look good? This is the direction I'm kind of going. And yeah, great, great, great. You come up, and then the next week she comes back and she gives us her draft to the four of us who are in that meeting. We go, yeah, well, Barb didn't have a chance to take a look at it yet. And so now Barb's thinking, wait a minute, we talked about this. Why is that not in service? And Heather explains why, and she goes, oh, that makes total sense. Or she stands her ground and says, no, I really think we should do that because of XXY, and so maybe we're revising the service at that point. That's one way it could go, a way a pastor could be involved in it. Now, a pastor, it could be that diamond is the worship director, and the pastor is primarily involved in those devise meetings where a broader group are getting together and just kind of facilitating the broader perspective on the service as well.
I think unless it's careful, then it could go askew. And you have people missing each other. You have this team brainstorming, going through these stages, pre-devise, devise, as you name them. But unless the pastor runs with it, you've got something.
Right. Yeah. So now we're getting to the practicalities of different contexts and different situations about where these are just simply stages in the process. So how the pastor is involved in each one of these stages might be particular to your context. So say for instance here at Calvin College, Mary Halst, who say preaches at our Sunday evening services, is not involved in this process at all. Except for me saying, hey, Mary, this is the service that we have. What do you think? And she looks at it and goes, yeah, fine. Yeah, that's largely the extent that she is involved, other than sort of she gives more of the big picture vision of what are the themes, if we're going to do something really practical or concrete that responds to the message, then you know she's really involved in that. But largely the crafting of the whole service she will leave to me and then my team of students that I work with.
Can you come to my church?
Yeah.
Can you describe how this process will work with you and John and Heather and Barb?
Yeah.
How do you see the explore stage in particular being productive with, say, those four folks, or...
Right, right, so...
Or say you're transitioning from this to...
Yes.
Initiating this. Can you
right,
talk a little
right.
bit about how that might go?
Well, in particular about how it went with us is we did actually use the stage. Now, the pre-vise explorer part is separate from that Tuesday meeting.
Yeah.
So that kinds of things happen in lots of different ways. And in a moment, we can do some more brainstorming around this. I'm going to give the big overview. But that happens, say, I would go to my choir. And I would say, here's the sermon series that's coming up next. What ideas do you have about worship, about the sermon series? Just give me some ideas. Or at the potluck, we would just say, hey, everybody, we're going to break up into groups over here. We just want to get your ideas and just generate those ideas. So John, or our pastor, wouldn't necessarily be like direct. More I was involved in leading a lot of those kinds of things. And then we would have that kind of pot of ideas that were with us then when we were actually planning services. So we would refer back to that bigger list of just ideas. Maybe not every week, but we'd come back to them maybe in new seasons, or we'd revisit those periodically. Maybe when we're doing analyzing of services, we would go back and then take a look at how well we've been doing, reflecting some of the ideas that we're seeing in our congregation. But then again, largely, I would assume that about 80% of what you would get out of those pre-vise sessions wouldn't necessarily work. It's just the 20% goal that you're really looking for or something. Does that kind of help a little bit? And yeah.
Well, I'm going to piggyback on her question. Yeah. If you were going to try to start this in a, and I'm going to say a small church, what would you recommend as far as... Like, would you recommend looking at a whole season ahead or a month ahead? You know, how do you start? Where would you?
Right. Well, let me just kind of make a segue here. I want to come to this.
Okay.
I want to come to this more, and I want to do some bigger brainstorming together about all this, because I've had two contexts where I've worked this out. Right. So my contexts are limited. But you all come from lots of different contexts, and you've seen the ways in which collaborative planning and evaluation have worked well. And I want to hear from you about how these different stages would work in your context and where you've seen some of these working in your context to sort of help us all learn together. Because I recognize that a campus community is very different than a congregation, too. Well, let me just turn the page real quick here, and let me just show you. So it looks like there's a lot of meetings. But actually, it's one meeting. So here's sort of a sample planning agenda, where the first 5 to 10 minutes of the meeting, we're analyzing. So we have on our judge hats, you know, our yellow light, red light kind of hats. And then we would look at the service that had, so we would revise the service that we devised at the previous week's meeting. So you're say at least 2 weeks out. And so that revise, you're still keeping on the judge hat. You're still doing yellow light kind of thinking. And then when you take a few minutes and you're like, okay, now what are some things? When you've got people around the table, it's a whole lot easier to say, now who's going to do what than going away and then trying to accomplish it by phone calls and emails and Facebook and whatnot. WorshipPlanningCenter.com and so forth. So you realize, start to do some realizing right there in the meeting. You still got your kind of, I'm thinking critically about things, what needs to get done, kind of judge hat type stuff. And then you're done with that real critical thinking type stuff. Maybe you take a little break. Let's get up, go get some water, and you come back, and now we're going to have much more green light thinking, open thinking, where you're much more green light thinking at that point when you're going to devise the next week's service. The reason why it helps to have those things separated is because once you start trying to throw in judge hat and being brainstorming at the same time, it just kills it. It just really kills the creativity in the room. So try to separate those as much as possible. But it all happens within a meeting. So generally, a meeting is an hour, maybe an hour and a half max that I've experienced. that way. Though there was a group that gave us 3 hours. Very generative meetings.
They are very generative, and the value is that everything is at the table, and we consider worship primary to our life, and therefore we give it primary importance in planning.
Yeah. So let's just, I want to think of here about your particular context and tools that might be involved in applying some of these things. Just take just a moment to yourselves, and if you could write down just a list of, maybe you have five or six or just a few. Who might you invite to a pre-vise session? And then, along with that, what groups already exist from whom you could receive input and feedback? So, like I mentioned, go into my choir. So, who would you invite, and alternatively, what groups already exist that you might want to get feedback from?
You don't want the questions to be too directive, but
right.
Talk about worship at the church,
Norma and Howie have a really helpful book, Designing Worship Together, and it's been a while since I've read it here, but
what's the name of the
book? I would. Designing Worship Together, Norman Wall Malafite and Howie Vanderwell. Alright, so maybe just turn to two or three people who are around you and just kind of share your list of people that you would invite to a pre-vise session or what groups already exist in your community. Ready, set, go.
Thank you.
groups that already exist that you could connect with to get ideas. You might go and be or send an ambassador to get ideas. Yeah.
Youth groups.
Youth groups. Just quick pop.
Children educators.
Yeah, go to the
Sunday school classes.
Sunday school classes. Go to the classes. Yeah.
Consistory.
Consistory meetings. Yeah.
Dancers.
Do you already have like a dance team or a group that already has? Others. Music teams, different music groups that you have. What else?
Prayer team,
yeah. What else? Yeah.
I said visitors because they see things through different lenses. It may not be the first time visiting,
right.
But...
Yeah, that's great. You're just exploring, getting ideas. Very good. Yeah, other groups.
We actually have a long-term planning committee that's now looking at all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Rather than just talk about buildings and
stuff. Now, what think about groups, too, that maybe you wouldn't even naturally think to have any connection to worship. Yeah? Mm. Ask them for ideas. They're a part of the congregation, right? Mm-hmm. Who else? I think of.
We have community partnerships.
Okay.
So like, we have a community gospel choir that we partner at various times, and a storytelling organization and those kinds of groups. It may not be an ongoing thing, but it's for... special services.
Mm-hmm. Shut-ins don't get much feedback, so they, you know, mm-hmm. to see what they're seeing on the web or what they're getting on their videotape or DVD.
Right. That'd be excellent. So when you're already on a visit to a shut-in, to ask them just to get their feedback. Mm-hmm. It's a real open, listening way. Really appreciate that. Now, you asked a sort of a set of questions. What are resources that you all have found that have been available to you that have been good to help you in brainstorming, that have been generative for you, and just coming up with ideas? You're just exploring.
Newspaper.
The newspaper. Just reading the newspaper? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Well, I go to the Text Week website. I follow the liturgical calendar.
Great.
The worship ideas.
Great. Web resources.
Reformed worship.
Yeah. Our church, Call to Worship.
Call to Worship, yeah. To the PCSA. Good.
We're using Jane Arden Jan, Worship Matters.
Yeah.
She has really good questions at the end, not the first two chapters, but at the end of the rest of the chapters. There's some really good questions to help, I think, start conversation.
Yeah.
Jane Rogers Van, Worship Matters.
Think going to conferences are really helpful?
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Generating ideas, going to worship services. You know, sometimes you come away with what's called festival envy syndrome. You know, and you have to do a lot of translating. You know, how's this actually going to work in a real place? You know, but they're generative for ideas.
And ask your people to go to other churches.
Right. Yeah, asking your own community just to visit. Yeah.
I was just thinking the same thing as a pastor to go when you have a Sunday off to other churches and worship and experience the style of worship.
Friends and family will attend other churches.
Yes, yeah. Friends and family.
Most of our ideas have come really from personal conversations with individuals and through that building a relationship. And usually it's... from someone not in the church, in like unchurched people, like what would I, if I were to go to church, what kind of church would I go to?
Right.
And it's kind of asking those kinds of questions.
Yeah, good. So let me shift then now for the pre-vibes, and Elizabeth, we'll brainstorm a little bit together after if you haven't had that question answered very well. So devise. Let me get a sense from you. Just tell me. So how long? Or let me ask you. So imagine this is a planning meeting where you get some people around the table. From what some of y'all are already doing, how long or how often or what time of the day do you see this kind of thing happening? Just tell me. So we got 3 hours on Monday
afternoon. And we would be better in the morning.
Okay.
We really
yeah.
Be
okay.
In the morning.
All right, so there's one example. I do my students for an hour on Monday afternoons every week. Yeah.
We squeeze about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half on Sunday right after worship.
Right after worship. Do you feel like, is that a, how is that? Is that a generative time, do you feel?
It is,
like
but it takes a little bit of time to get going.
Get going, okay. Yeah, that's good. Good.
But every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to share with you one experience.
Yeah.
There's a church in Los Angeles that called together everyone who was in some way involved in the creative arts. Mm-hmm. So singers, dancers, paint, so people who paint,
yeah,
sculpture,
yeah,
anyone at all, dancers, and they were invited to the pastor's home on a Friday night.
Mm.
And the pastor had said, we're going to do a Genesis series on Genesis.
Right.
Now, in the church up until that point, the Genesis theories meant you're going to start at verse 1, and you're going to go all the way through systematically,
yeah,
week by week. And what he instead did was talk about Genesis in terms of images. So 1 month would be water, the next month would be earth, the next fire, the next wind. And he invited them to think of what we would do on each Sunday for each of those, for images that come from water, images,
mm-hmm,
that come from earth. And they planned on Friday night, then broke into groups, and then on Saturday, and by the end of Saturday, in this sort of mini-retreat fashion,
yeah,
they had a rough draft of the 2, 3, 4 months of series that included artistic installations, video, sketches,
yeah,
drama, the dances, the artists who were working up front during the services,
yeah,
those kinds of things. And that single thing in 1997 transformed the congregation from that point forward.
Yeah, mm-hmm, that's great.
I think it well summarizes the process that you're laying,
yeah,
out there.
Yeah.
Because then it created a community that then were in constant relationship with each other,
yeah,
about what can we do,
yeah,
in the future.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much for sharing that example. That's excellent. I love the retreat idea of going away, getting away, having that time away from the daily commitments and responsibilities. That's a great idea, too.
We do about an hour a week, but where we get tripped up is we're usually working 2 to 3 weeks out to the sort of detailed plan, but sometimes a great idea comes up then, and no way is that anthem going to be ready, or
right,
that drama, you know. So where we get tripped up is, how to work far enough ahead to have the lead time for the pieces,
yeah,
you know. Or sometimes we do that, and we're locked in because the choir has this anthem ready, but now the service has taken a different turn. And
right.
Then you have all kinds,
yeah,
of conflict.
Yeah. Right.
Say, no, we don't want that one that you've worked, yeah, on for 7 weeks.
Right. And I think that's where, you know, Audrey, your question about, you know, where is the pastor involved in the process, I think is so important, because I know so many music directors who complain that their pastor is only coming up with their sermon, you know, Friday before Sunday or Saturday before Sunday, and they're just their hands are tied. They just can't really be creative. They really can't do the kind of advanced planning that they'd like. And you know, I don't have any brilliant answers to that situation, other than it just has to be a conversation with the pastor. What are the priorities of the congregation? What are the priorities in terms of planning of worship? What are the goals of collaboration and being involved? And then how much can then the pastor be on board in terms of at least planning out broader themes and planning out scripture passages and at least giving some, I'm going to basically go in this direction. Those kinds of things are really helpful.
And what does he see his role within this process? Is he the, is he the hub around which all the folks read? Or is he himself or she herself a part of the process?
Mm-hmm. And I think it largely depends on context. Because for some pastors, it's not her gift. You know, it may be that a one pastor, her gifts are really in pastoral care, or maybe administration, and they you know, love to preach, but in terms of when they look at a page of music and they think creatively, they're just like, it's just not where I'm at. I love it that you're great at that. I want you to thrive at that. I want you to own that, and I want to partner with you in that. But they don't feel like they need to be the hub for it. So it really it depends on the gifts of the person.
Yeah. I want to speak a bit on the lead time issue. Yeah. Our planning model is actually somewhat similar to what you laid out.
Yeah.
It's not as well structured.
These are just categories to be thinking about. Yeah.
But one thing that we found is that we tend to start out the process very collaboratively. And the closer and closer we get to a particular given Sunday,
yeah.
It becomes much more central.
Yeah.
For some of the things that we've done with the grant this past year, we planned around certain liturgical seasons.
Yeah.
So sometimes we've had up to 6 months of plan out some aspects of these.
Yeah.
And the model was great.
Yeah.
But as a routine matter to plan out every week's sermon,
yes. Yeah.
It feels like, you know, at least for my congregation.
Yeah. And that's where I think the sort of the hybrid or trying to maximize the advantages here is saying, let's have this bigger group that's sort of the more representative group of the congregation sort of be looking at the service, giving the brainstorming, but then when it really comes to nailing down what's going to happen in that service from movement to movement to movement, a group of people is awful. It just does not work. You know, I mean, you really, you need a couple individuals, either, I found that really, in my experience, two max is the best to sit down on a table and really nail out details. Personally, I like to do it by myself. It's just, and I've seen that with my students, too. But, you know, you farm it out to one or two people to really nail out those details. But then but then to get back this group is to then, you have to work enough in advance to bring it back this group to keep you honest. So they're not saying, wait a minute, you've just completely disregarded all of our plans. Or you're shutting out these particular people out of the conversation, and to keep you honest and accountable to it, to bring it back to that large group. So that's what I've found has been helpful, so you're maximizing both. Because, yeah, when it comes down to Saturday, you got to have people to get it done. Yeah. Are we done at, we're done at a quarter after, aren't we?
Yes.
Oh, good Lord. Sorry. Hey, let me just point out a couple of things to you. One is, if you turn over a page there, here's a worship planning worksheet. So, Elizabeth, maybe this helps a little bit. If you think about, some of you may be aware of this idea of vertical habits or these postures that we have before God. I love you, I'm sorry, thank you, these habits. We also call them praise, confession, assurance, thanksgiving, and so forth. Well, for any one of those kinds of habits or those moves in a worship service, there's so many different ways in which you could help the congregation to pray in that mode. So one way to think about it, just if you go down to the bottom, there's this worship planning grid here, and these are just to generate ideas. I would never, ever use this for every single service, and every single, it was just, you know, it would just take you too long. But just to generate ideas, oftentimes when we approach something like praise, we say, okay, I want to praise, and let's see, I'll use a contemporary text, maybe it's a contemporary praise song that I'm going to, my action is I'm going to sing it. And the art form I'm going to use is music, and the people who are going to lead it is the worship team. That's sort of at least in my context, that's the default. Like, what are we going to do? We're going to sing a praise song, and we're all going to stand and clap while we do it. But what if you thought, what if we used a song? So I'm going to use a biblical text. And what if we spoke it? What if that was the action? And what if while we spoke it, we also had an image on the screen? Or maybe an artist who was sort of painting a scene of it. Or, you know, just making some abstract images with it. And then the people who were involved in leading it were singles. I'm just throwing out. You know, so these are just kind of generated to get us out of boxes that we tend to, sort of ruts that we tend to get into, to generate other ideas. Same thing with confession. Oftentimes it's You know, well, we're going to use a biblical text, and we're going to pray it, and the pastor's going to lead it. And we're going to be sitting while we do it. You know, what if we, you know, thought about what are other postures? What could we do with our hands? Who are other people who could pray that prayer? What if it was a very contemporary prayer that really addressed, you know, specific sins in our context? And then what if we also sung our confession? You know, there's just all different ways in which we could approach these different elements. This is when you're realizing, this is just a sample sort of grid that I use in planning a service for my students, as well as this is what I use to communicate details to people as well, so that whole section on notes and then leaders, I try to put as much on the page as possible so that I don't have to keep saying, remember this, remember I told you that, remember I told you that. A leader's edition is helpful instead of having just the bulletin to work from, I mean, with the leader's edition. And then lastly, here are just some principles of worship that we have at Calvin College that we regularly use to analyze our services. And these could also generate ideas for pre-vise sections too. You know, so if I'm looking at the main principles, worship at Calvin College is, and I look at holistic, you know, I might get with, you know, a group of people, I might ask, how could we include doubt better in our services? Because I'm trying to get at how are we more holistic? You know, how can we connect up our brains, our minds, a little bit more in worship? You know, do that in a real generative way. You know, so those are kinds of things. And then we go back and then use those then to analyze what we're doing, how we're doing it. And then the other ones here are more specific skills involved in leading worship. So I'm sorry I ran out of time. For some reason I thought we had another 15 minutes. So sorry about that. But I'm happy I'm around for another 10 minutes or so if anybody wants to have any questions. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome job.